nothing short of institutionalized management of people that have been marginalized to maintain their marginalization and control them. Through the Occupy movement and the process we're going through and the relationships we're building, we know there are better ways, and that relationships is the source, and that we don't want to give our power to corporations or to institutions anymore. We are the power. We are the 99%. It's up to us. That doesn't mean we have to do therapy for each other, but I firmly believe that something that's really significant is that, I'll tell you my own personal story, is they wanted to psychiatrize me and put me on drugs, which I would still be on. That was like 15 years ago. But I had some Quaker friends who were psychiatrists who get the whole picture, and they were tired. And there, but for the grace of God, I didn't do the conventional program. They paid for my therapy for 7 years. It cost $35,000. They were wonderful people, and I thank the maker for them. The reality is the government was willing to pay five times as much as that per year to have me see somebody, to talk about something, and put me on drugs forever. We're all just one trauma away from presenting as something that can be harnessed and put in change to the DSM-IV. And that's really important to know. And it's important. I pray for those people with power and those that, because they must have some kind of hole inside of them to have all they have and still need more. And what we've learned through Occupy is that with each other in love, we have what we need and we support each other. This is a very traditional indigenous way of thinking. Somebody once said to me that, well, how can you have an inherent self-government? How can you have government inside you? It's such a Western ethnocentric perspective. Kin, clan, family, moieties, totems, all those things connected us. Every time we had to deal with something new, technologically, or make an adjustment because of our integrity and our understanding of the world we were in, that we're just part of, we would create another system and throw it over top and weave it in. And now, for example, my brother and I would be on opposite sides of something for the purposes of discussing how we were going to do it. So we wove and wove and wove and wove. We did not give our power away. Let's stop giving our power away. Let's take it back. We are taking it back. We're here. And the psychiatric industry, ha ha. A lot of you know that my big thing around human dignity is the right to know who you are and where you come from. The psychiatric industry is the biggest industry behind new reproductive technologies and genetic human engineering. That's where the big money is. Check out where the institutional pensions of the judicial system go. That they're in psychiatry, they're in the drug companies, pharmaceutical companies, and they're making big money out of genetically designing human babies. And those human babies are not black babies and native babies and chin babies. Those babies are the Umber, super, what do you call the German word, Umber? Yes, Ubers. Ubers. But you know what? Just like we're all just one trauma away from being labeled and marginalized, we're all just one accident away from being a person with a disability. So let's support each other. Let's not give our power away. Let's love each other. And let's say no more. No more to Big Pharma. We do not want to live in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Miigwech.
I have to say that this is the first year that Kappa has done something as part of the Occupy movement, and we're delighted to be working with you guys today. The next speaker is Emma Heath Engel. Emma, come on up and say a few words.
Hi everyone, thanks so much for coming out today. It means a huge amount to me to be speaking to all of you in front of CAMH right now. Anin Emma Nadijnikaz Bejun Dodem Toronto Ndunjuba. I'm an Ojibwe, that means my name's Emma, I'm from the Tiger Clan, and I'm from Toronto. I'm introducing myself in Ojibwe to honor the native people of Toronto and of Turtle Island, and also to honor my ancestors, and most of all, in this context, to honor the people and traditions that saved my life from the psychiatric system. If it hadn't been for some amazingly powerful healers of the native traditions of this land, I think I would still be on medication, I would still be in the psych ward. So basically, I just wanted to talk a bit about my experience in the psych ward and how basically my story is a slap in the face for psychiatry. In 2008, I was experimenting with a lot of alternative healing traditions from many parts of the world, and I entered a shamanic state of being. I had no support. For 3 days or so, I hardly ate and I hardly slept. I connected extremely intensely with the natural world. I developed a synesthetic relationship with color. I connected with my totem animal. I also did some extremely ridiculously embarrassing things. I bought like over $200 in clothes that I didn't need, which I proceeded to dress myself in as a peacock. I removed all my clothing in public at one point. I broke many of my possessions. The list goes on. I ended up in a psych ward. People around me didn't know what to do. They took me there. I wanted to go to the hospital. I'd never wanted to go to a psych ward. I just wanted to lie in a hospital bed for a bit to figure out what the hell was going on with me. So I landed there. I was forced on medication and I was forced to stay in the ward for a month. I was told every day that I had bipolar disorder, that I would never recover, that the disease was progressive, that I would be on medication for the rest of my life, that the medication would make me less intelligent but mentally stable. I proceeded to leave the ward in a month, be off medication in 2 months. I graduated from university with first class honors. I just got accepted to OISE into grad school. I just completed a volunteership in the Middle East in the West Bank, and I'm planning to go back. I'm working on a food justice initiative over there. And I'm currently also working on an initiative to create alternative healing spaces, which some of you may have heard about. I was working with Mind Freedom in Oregon just recently, and my goal is to create spaces of alternative healing for people such as myself and others who would otherwise end up in the psychiatric system or have suffered through it. Spaces which are both putting forth sustainable food systems, so producing healthy organic food, at the same time as offering a whole range of alternative therapies. The main purpose being to create spaces of support and empowerment for people who otherwise have a really hard time fitting into society, but who are nonetheless extremely gifted people. I know a number of extremely powerful, influential healers from various traditions all over the world, all of whom who have recognized myself as a healer of sorts, and I hope to be able to develop these capacities and pass them on to others in similar situations. So yeah, I just wanted to really say that today, to really slap psychiatry in the face, and thanks so much for listening.
I've been demonstrating throughout the years, over the last, starting around the late 80s, there has been a particular assault on one segment of our population. In 1990, the Bush administration announced the Decade of the Brain, and they specifically targeted children. In 1992, the highest paid psychiatrist in the States, Goodwin, announced an anti-violence initiative targeted at inner city youth, so that schools would be testing them to identify youth who would end up violent and treat them. This despite the fact that years earlier, the American Psychiatric Association amicus brief to the Supreme Court said that it has no ability to predict dangerousness, that it, in the best of circumstances, quote, psychiatry is wrong in predicting future dangerousness 2 out of every 3 times. In 1999, a renewed assault on youth happened. The response to Columbine and some other school shootings was a huge initiative to round up youth again with the cooperation of schools, find the violent children and treat everyone. The idea being that if these people had only been on psychiatric drugs, if these children had only been on psychiatric drugs, that none of this would have happened. Incidentally, two of the three shooters were on a therapeutic dose of psychiatric drugs at the time, which begs the question of what was causing this problem. It is my pleasure to introduce two next speakers who will be addressing the very specific danger to our children, Liam Walsh and Julie Wood. Can we hear it for them?
There's a lot about mental health in the media these days. I know that The Agenda is doing a special series this week on mental health, and I've been watching it, and there's so much misinformation that it's unbelievable. One of the things that you almost always get either no information or wrong information from the media about is psychiatric drugs. Psychiatric drugs are almost always prescribed for conditions that aren't nearly as serious as the side effects of the drugs. And I think what Emma just said reinforces that. Psychiatric drugs are poisoned, and they don't cure anything. The drug companies know that their drugs cause a lot of harm, and they're forced to put the information in their drug monographs. So it's buried in there if you go and read the drug monographs, but nobody does. For example, neuroleptic drugs. They should never be called antipsychotics because they don't reduce psychosis. But what they do is shut your brain down. So if you want somebody to calm down, you can give them these drugs. But they certainly don't make anybody better, and they have horrible side effects. And the list goes on for pages when you read it. Stimulants are supposed to enhance concentration, and students use them. And they do for the short term on really boring, repetitive tasks. However, if you take them over the long term, they'll reduce your creativity, they'll change your personality, they'll make you paranoid, they'll shrink your brain, and they will do a lot of harm. Antidepressants cause depression and suicidality. And on the school shooters, I think I saw a stat from a woman in Ireland who found that there were, of 21 school shootings, they knew that 15 of the shooters were on SSRI antidepressants, 5 were withheld and 2 weren't. So that's an interesting side observation. Tranquilizers are addictive, and addiction causes a lot of problems. They also cause anxiety. Take them for a while and you'll find out. In other words, all these drugs cause the problems that they give them to people to solve. That's really frightening. My son was killed by these drugs. After his grandmother died, he went to his doctor and said he was sad, and he got sent to a psychiatrist and was given an antidepressant. And then later they told him he had ADHD and gave him stimulants. And it took those for a number of years. And I didn't know. I had no idea about these drugs back then. But after 4 years, his personality had changed. He was really edgy, paranoid, and he stopped taking the drugs, and the withdrawal caused him to have a psychotic episode, and then he got taken to hospital because of that, and they dumped all kinds of drugs on him that he couldn't tolerate. They caused him to gain enormous amounts of weight. They shut down his brain, and he couldn't stand it anymore. He lost everything. He was a student at U of T. He'd been a debater. He was heavily involved in theater. He was a sensitive kid who loved his friends and loved his social life. He couldn't stand it, and he decided life wasn't worth living, and he killed himself. And that's what these drugs do to people. That's what they do. Liam knows.
Yes, they do. And thank you, Julie, and I'm a very tragic loss. So, first of all, I just wanted to thank everyone for coming out today and showing their support towards the disbanding of the horrible practice of psychiatry. I have been working for the past several years to bring to light the serious issue surrounding children in psychiatry's grasp. I was a victim of psychiatry from a very young age, although particularly around age 10 or 11, things got out of hand. And I had a bad reaction to Paxil. And yes, at age 11, it's a drug that's not even approved for any children to take. And I ended up in a horrible psychiatric center for children for about 5 weeks, where I was subjected to life-scarring treatment, including being held down to the floor and being forced to take medications against my will. Following this ordeal, I was given so many different medications, and I can't list them all, and I was told by my school, in their exact words, no med, no school. Essentially, that unless I took these powerful drugs, that I couldn't go to school. This carried on until age 17, when I came to a conclusion that psychiatry was no more than fraud, and that I wanted nothing to do with it. At this point, I went to my regular doctor without telling my psychiatrist, and I told her that I did not want to take these medications anymore. We talked for a while, and after this long discussion, she told me that she fully supported my decision to become drug-free, and that in her opinion, I didn't need the drugs. Thankfully, at the time, I was only on a low dose of Ritalin, and my doctor told me it was safe to stop right away. Of course, my school didn't agree with my decision at all. The next day, when I refused to take my medication, I was led to the vice principal's office where I was told I would need to go home. I refused, stating I had withdrawn my consent to treatment. The vice principal had the nerve to threaten me with calling the school board's lawyer, for which I told her to go right ahead and do because I knew my rights. She kicked me out of her office, and after a while she called me back and essentially begged me to change my mind. My psychiatrist also kindly offered to find something else for me to take. I said no, and since that day, I haven't stepped into that psychiatrist's office once, and I have remained drug-free, and it's been over 7 years. What's more, is in those 7 years, I've accomplished so much by fighting for the rights of children, as some people are aware. Of course, it hasn't been without some significant challenges. In May of 2010, I, along with some others, was sued for libel by the horrible place where I was placed at age 11, because I had built a website that contained true accounts of what was going on there. And this was obviously hurting their business and was causing them to lose donations, because they were a charity. They still are, sadly. Of course, because of my financial situation, I couldn't hire a lawyer, and no one was willing to help me on a large scale except give me a few small pointers. So I was stuck with the daunting task of defending myself against this serious matter. Many sleepless nights ensued, either because of fear, or having to act as my own lawyer and study laws and create documents. However, these sleepless nights only continued until July 7th, 2010, when what I can only describe as the best thing that ever happened occurred. I received a phone call at 6 a.m. from a friend telling me that I needed to get myself out of bed and run up to the Toronto Star paper box and buy one. Lo and behold, the place that was suing me was being exposed on the front page of the Toronto Star for locking up children that didn't have mental disorders. I quote from the article, with certain redactions and corrections, of course. In one case, a 15-year-old girl's moderately eccentric interests in origami and the study of bugs were cited by a psychiatrist as examples of a possible mental disorder. Another teen's admission of having unprotected sex was taken as evidence of a suicide wish because such behavior could lead to AIDS. A Toronto Star review of 32 cases over a two-year period where a youth formally appealed the lockup decision found that nearly half, 14, were overturned after an emergency hearing by the Ontario Child and Family Services Review Board. Most of these children were ordered released on the grounds that they didn't even have a mental disorder. The girl with the moderately eccentric interest in the study of bugs appealed in December 2008. The board ruled that the 15-year-old gifted student's behavior, pouring flour on the floor and getting into physical confrontations with her mother, was a result of teen-parent conflict and was not caused by a mental disorder. In the case of the girl who admitted to having unprotected sex, a psychiatrist claimed the teen refused to take birth control pills, which indicated a gross impairment to make reasoned decisions. The board's decision cited evidence that the child had discussed birth control with a doctor and that the teen's mother threw out sample pills and refused to fill the prescription. The board also took issue with a psychiatrist's suggestion that the teen's ability to make reasoned judgments was impaired because she took Prozac only when she needed to feel better. This is typical of even adult patients taking medication, the board wrote in its decision. To suggest that a child be admitted to a treatment center because of this is unrealistic. In one case involving a 14-year-old girl whose mother contacted Children's Aid for help after her daughter was sexually assaulted, a psychiatrist told the review board, an assessment in this secure treatment unit will sometimes lead to prioritizing youth with community resources. The board called this an irrelevant consideration. The decision stated, to deprive a child of her liberty in order to more readily access community resources flies in the face of the use of secure treatment as an extraordinary measure of last resort. And thankfully, because of this article, this beautiful article, I used it to my advantage, and to make a long story short, I emerged from this libel suit unscathed. This all goes to show that the practice of psychiatry is out of whack, putting our school children on powerful psychotropic drugs, many of which aren't even approved for children, and locking up innocent children that don't need forced help must be stopped. It also goes to show that psychiatry will do absolutely anything it can to silence its victims. Psychiatry is everywhere it shouldn't be, in particular in our schools. And it needs to be served with an eviction notice to get out of our schools and away from our children. Thank you.
We have an even bigger hand. Thank you, Liam. Thank you, Julie. Thank you very much for speaking today. We in the anti-psychiatry movement have not in the past paid enough attention to the terrible jeopardy of children. This is going to be corrected starting today. You know, we used to demonstrate outside the Clark all the time. We moved it to the headquarters of the government because the government funds all this. But we used to have an annual demonstration out there. In fact, very early on, Dawn Weitz, myself, and Colley Monroe went inside and handed out leaflets, and that started a tradition where people went inside and handed out leaflets. This is a place that we all understand is the Shock Shop. This is a place that we all understand is the place where which masterminds much of the strategy around psychiatry in Ontario and indeed Canada. One of the people who has been organizing for years and years, I guess I should say decades and decades against that, is my wonderful ally, Dawn Weitz, and I'm gonna ask him to come up and tell you about our history with the Clark Institute.
Some history. Thank you, Bonnie. First of all, I just want to comment and make a very quick supportive comment of what Liam was saying, that this psycho-prison supports child abuse, elder abuse, person abuse in the form of forced drugging and forced electroshock, and always did. And So I'm going to read, I'm going to try not to read too much, but I'll stick to what I read about this being a shock shop central of Ontario. As many of you know, I'm an anti-psychiatry, proud anti-psychiatry, and angry anti-psychiatry activist who's been protesting against psychiatric oppression, including electroshock, and I'm proud to be doing this with Occupy Toronto, one of our trusted allies, and also OCAP. 24 years ago, on May 2nd, 1988, the late Jack Wild, shock survivor and member of Resistance Against Psychiatry, which was the successor group to Ontario Coalition to Stop Electroshock, which Bonnie and a few of us started in 1983. Well, 1988, 24 years ago, Jack Wild and I were arrested on the 10th floor of this building. Why? Because we were trying to hand out peacefully during visiting hours copies of alternative but accurate information on electroshock. We called our information Electroshock Facts, Your Right to Know the Truth, not the lies that are being churned out now, and you'll be hearing them for the next week on Mental Health Week. We went into the Clark to combat the Ministry of Health's Guide to Understanding. It should have been told a Guide to Misunderstanding Electroshock. And why? Because the Ministry of Health's information on shock conspicuously avoids telling you and informing you about brain damage, which always occurs during every treatment, including permanent memory loss and trauma, especially to women who are the main victims. Big Nurse refused to allow us to hand out our information during visiting hours, and or even to see any patients. So we sat down in nonviolent civil disobedience in front of the elevators and told her, we're not going to move until you allow us to hand out this information or to speak with some patients about electroshock. And for that, Big Nurse called security, they called the cops, and we were arrested for trespass for the simple reason of trying to hand out information, freedom of information. Anyway, make a long story short, and I will try to be short because I'm winding this up. Okay. I got it. It's okay. Yeah. I hope they're going after some shrinks. I hope they're good. Anyway, although we lost this human rights battle at the Clark and in court, where we had to pay a few hundred dollars because we lost the appeal, our charter rights, the charter right for people to get information and freedom of assembly, we were shot down in court. CAPA, Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault, Mind Freedom, and many other survivor-led human rights and advocacy organizations and dissident mental health professionals are speaking today, protesting against electroshock, forced drugging, and other dehumanizing and harmful psychiatric procedures around the world, and fighting for the rights of our brothers and sisters locked up here and in every psycho prison around the world. All power to our brothers and sisters imprisoned in CAMH. All power to all psychiatric survivors. All power to Occupy Toronto, OCAP, and other allies in struggle and solidarity. Thank you.
A very, very long time activist in this area, and one who quite rightfully has had many, many awards and prizes. Dawn Whites, people, come on. can do. Stop shock now.
Stop shock now. Stop shock now. Stop shock now. Stop shock now.
Okay. Why don't we do that chant again we did before? Do people remember it?
Yes.
We are the people. We are the 99%. Psychiatry is attacking us.
We are the people. We are the 99%. Psychiatry is attacking us. We are the people. We are the 99%. Psychiatry is attacking us.
Once more.
We are the people. We are the 99%. Psychiatry is attacking us.
Thank you very much, people, for making this a wonderful day. Thank you again for all the people who contributed to this. We had an exit plan. I do not see that there's any problem people leaving by themselves if they want to, however, at this point. Do you want to announce something, Chris? No. All right. Yes? Okay. Did you want to say something now to everyone? Okay, just a minute. Before I end, I'm going to turn this over to Chris.
No, okay.
I stand corrected. Better than sitting corrected. Okay, again, I'm thanking everybody for being here today. I'm thanking everyone for working on this. Two things. If anybody would like to come and join Kappa, we are having a meeting to evaluate this event and to talk about future events on June the 3rd at 1 o'clock on the 7th floor of Ontario Institute for Studies and Education, and we would dearly love to see many of you there. If anyone wants to celebrate with us, anyone wants to take a sign home,
or to leave them here.
If anyone wants to take a sign home, that would be great. If anyone wants, is someone taking control of the signs? Someone's taking control of the signs. I take it back. The sign problem has been attended to. If anyone likes to join us today, we have a reservation at Country Style, which is near Brunswick and Bloor, in order to eat a meal together. Our reservation isn't until 4:30. And so any of us who are going are going to be meeting first at my house, and we can lounge around at my house and then proceed at our scheduled time to Country. Anyone who's here is welcome to join us, and we'll talk, and then we'll go together to Country Style. Thank you, everybody, and a happy and psychiatry-free year. Woo!